Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
And our topic for today is emerging voices, and this is going to be a very different show. As you know, this is our penultimate show. I love that word, penultimate. I don't know where it comes from, but it's our next last show, and we wanted to do something really different. So I am working this week with a group of people that I are in a category that I love, and I call that category emerging voices, and they are essentially people who have something profound to say, as it looks to me, but maybe aren't yet able to get their voice fully out into the world, or sometimes they're really good at getting their voice out into the world and they're trying to figure out what to say. And so I've invited them to join me for today's show, and I'll be introducing them one at a time and bringing them on. And the basic request I gave them, the basic format that I gave them, is if you had 90 seconds to share your life's message, what would your message be? And the idea sort of came from Mahatma Gandhi. He called me. No, it wasn't like that. But there's a story about Mahatma Gandhi where he was being followed around by a reporter, and the reporter kept trying to get an interview with him, but he didn't have time to do the interview because he was too busy saving India and doing all the various things that he did. But this reporter was very persistent, and finally, he sort of lost him at the train station, and as Gandhi's train is pulling out of the station, the reporter's running down the tracks behind him going, "Mahatma, give us your message for the people!" And he just said, "My life is my message." And that's sort of the prompt. That's sort of the starting point for today. And we're going to start with Nina Lockwood. She's a life coach. She's an abstract collage artist. She's a nature enthusiast. And she is apparently a gluten-free baker extraordinaire. I have not yet had the chance to put this to the test, but I will be. Nina, what is your message for the world?
You know, most people are at least somewhat familiar with the biblical injunction to let our light shine and not hide it under a basket. But very few of us actually make it beyond childhood with our light intact. So if you've been taught to consult the experts instead of the wisdom inside you.
I have.
Number two, if you've been taught to play it safe and give up on your dreams or not let yourself dream at all.
Me.
If you've been taught that the answer to the meaning of your life is anywhere other than in your own heart.
I thought it was in my foot, but that makes more sense.
Your light has been dimmed.
Damn it.
And we all know what that feels like. What I've discovered after spending, I don't know, decades of looking everywhere but inside myself, is that the answers to all you'll ever need to know are within you, and they're part of your divine design. They reveal hidden resources and infinite possibilities. And that light of yours that's gotten so dim, it gets brighter and brighter as you live from this place more and more. Life becomes kinder, simpler, and filled with love and light. It's easier than you could possibly imagine. And trust me, it's never too late to begin.
So let me just ask you about that for a minute. So why do you think it is? Well, in fact, no, I'm going to ask it different. For you, what was the turning point where you suddenly went, oh, inside? Oh, my heart. Oh, my wisdom.
I think there were a couple points that really stuck out in my life, one of which was that I often would put a lot of importance and validity on experts. So if I didn't know what to do, I'd ask somebody else. Or if I didn't know where to go.
Do you mean like hosts on Hay House Radio?
Well, yes, as a matter of fact.
So how did you get over us? In other words, because I know you a bit, and I know that you still do enjoy listening to things, and you haven't sort of cut off from external input. So how do you find that balance in yourself between following inner wisdom and being guided by people who have been following inner wisdom in their own lives?
That is a great question. And one of the answers to that is that I listen, and then I compare it with what's inside of me and what I hear inside of me, whether it resonates or doesn't resonate.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So, one of the things that is a very funny thing about this show, and about most shows on Hay House, is that we all get on, and on the whole, we all say, "Don't listen to us." Now, amazingly, we've gotten away with that for 14 years. But I think the reason being is that It's really hard to trust the invisible until you've trusted it so many times that it doesn't matter that you can't see it until it appears, that you can't hear it until it speaks to you. I remember working with a German client who didn't quite understand the idea of the still small voice within, and he said, "But Michael, if we have been listening for so long, why is it still small?" It's not like that. It is still. It is quiet. It is your deepest self, and it is always talking. The only variable is whether or not you're listening. So next up, we have Stephanie Benedetto Padovani. How'd I do?
Excellent.
I really scared, like the number one thing I'm scared about after 14 years of getting people's names wrong. I asked everyone to kind of jot down a few things by which I could introduce them. And seriously, what it says right here is lover of dragons and impossible questions. So with that said, Stephanie, what is your message for the world?
The message of my soul is not written on a billboard or in flashing neon lights. It is not tattooed on my forehead. It's not something that you can see. It is something you must feel. It is the boundless joy of knowing what you really are. I see your suffering, how you spend your days torturing yourself with the shoulds and musts, the have-tos and can'ts. You make yourself and the world so wrong that it breaks my heart. And in the same moment, I am laughing. Because you cannot see how beautiful and perfect and utterly exquisite you are. Your every breath is a miracle. Your every experience is the movement of God. There is nothing you need to do or be or say to earn this. You are already divine, held here in the manifest perfection of what is. I wish you could see yourself as I see you. Breathtakingly beautiful. Full of desire and despair, full of possibilities even when you are blind to them. When you know what you are, finally, you can rest. You can know the home you have always been. And then, from this place, oh, the games we shall play.
All right, so now as a lover of dragons, I'm guessing you've watched a few episodes of The X-Files over the years.
Oh, just a few.
Just a few, okay. So you know that poster he has on the wall, I Want to Believe? See, I hear that. I know people listen to that, and they want to believe. They love the sound of that. Maybe at some level they kind of know it's true, but it isn't their experience. How do you get from that I want to believe place to where it is actually a reality that you can speak about and mean it?
I think the first thing to do is just be in that place that you're in of not believing, of wanting to so badly, and not being able to see it.
And okay, so I'm there. I'm right there. I'm right there with you. What now, coach? I'm here. Been here for about 30 years.
Yeah, and then from that place of being okay in that moment, being not okay in that moment, then saying, all right, what else? What else could I see? What would be fun? What occurs to me? What question do I have? It's that settling into the present that opens up the possibility of something else, and that little sliver of that, oh, maybe I could believe this. What if I could, even if I'm not right now, comes in.
Beautiful. Thank you. And I think that notion, well, what if I could? What if it did? You know, it's such a simple question, but we're so used to asking, what if it doesn't? I had a friend who had been diagnosed with cancer and was terrified that everything that happened to her was evidence that it was spreading, and was absolutely sure that bad things were going to happen, and they were all things that could have happened, that have happened to people who have cancer. And what I said to her is, look, if you're gonna pay attention to all the things that could go wrong, you gotta be at least equally willing to look at all the things that could go right. And she actually heard that. And while she wasn't able to affirm that it's gonna be okay, she was able to find that place in her where she knew that it could be okay. And like Stephanie said, that was enough, and she's doing great. So next up, we have Daniel Rodriguez. He is from Spain, but lives in Concord, Massachusetts. And he's a life coach and an explorer of life. Daniel, what is your message for the world?
My message is that I want to, the importance of how we do things in life, not only what we do. I think there is a lot of importance, or we give a lot of importance to what we do in life, which is great, but there's the how, I think, is the key, how we do things. And with how.
Now, do you mean how as in, like, literally doing them right, or do you mean how as in the place we do them from?
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. From where you're doing them. From where. If you're able to do things, or if you're able to go through life from a place where you see the beauty of everything, with everyone, every situation, including yourself, that's important, including yourself, I think that's the main message I can send to the world, because it's the best moments I have in my life has been when I've been able to connect with that.
Now, I know that you work with businesses and you're a family man, and how do you kind of communicate that in a business setting? It's kind of easier for me to imagine within a family setting, you know, to that sort of authenticity and that naturalness. But when you're in a business setting, how does that play out?
I think with actions, how you react, how you listen to people and understand their feelings and where they come from. And if you come from a different place, you can, like, connect in a certain sense. But it's not so much you do it with words, you do it with feeling, you do it with how you communicate. But it's mainly through understanding the other person, I would say.
So it sounds like, okay, there's the understanding the other person, which to my mind would mean seeing what's behind whatever they're presenting. Would that be fair?
Yeah.
But it sounds like the other part is almost osmosis, or vibration, or the dominant energy in the room. Everything starts vibrating with the dominant vibration.
Yeah.
And if it's you, if it's that part of you, then that's going to change the room before you do anything.
Yeah.
Even before you say.
Yeah.
Very cool. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you.
And one of the things that kind of what Daniel was speaking to is, you know, really I see more and more in my own work and in the work of the coaches who've gone through Super Coach Academy, who've been trained in transformative coaching, is there's this thing, I don't know what to call it, so I wind up calling it transformative presence. And it is just that resonance. As you get used to coming from that place in you, people start to change before you say anything, before you do anything. And we get very obsessed about, I've got to say it right, I've got to do it right. But actually, as Daniel was pointing to, when you are in that place in you, and they are in that place in them, it has a way of just kind of working itself up. So, next up, we have Lena Degner. She is a coach and consultant from Denmark, based in London. She is writing her first book. Can I say the title? I like the title.
Go on.
All right. Googling Happiness by Lena Degner. Lena, what's your message for the world?
I think we go through life with glasses on. They start out clean, but quickly they become smudged with our stories about ourselves and the people around us. Our view becomes obscured. We may come to see a version of ourselves that's terribly imperfect and a world that's awfully scary. And for many of us, eventually the grime is all we see. It becomes our reality and who we think we are. We may try to remove it to fix ourselves and the world around us, but what we end up with is just a different thumbprint on the lens. How about instead you simply take off the glasses? It won't leave you blind or engulfed in a big dark nothing. No, the exchange is a magical one. Your obscured reality in exchange for angels that cheer for you as your vision is restored to see love and compassion and freedom like never before. Not because you made it happen, but because it was always there. No matter how faulty you think you or others are, it was ever only grime on the lens. You'll see that you're okay, not because of anything you do, but because it's how you're made. Your superpower is that you're an expression of life itself. You never have to deserve anything, nor do you need to be anyone other than who you are. Your true nature lights up the world all on its own. Beyond the grime, there's striking clarity. So have a little faith and take those smudgy glasses off.
Okay, so here's my question. Do we ever take the glasses off, or are we better off cleaning them? In other words, because if I think of a lot of the work in the sort of self-help world, it's really more about cleaning the glasses or putting on rose-colored glasses or taking off the rose-colored glasses and putting on... And so what's the difference between changing glasses, cleaning smudgy glasses, and literally just taking all glasses off?
I think as long as we're cleaning them or trying to change them to be something else, changing the color, we don't actually see the truth of what's there when we don't have the glasses on. If we take them off completely, that's where the magic is. It's so beautiful there that no glasses that you have on, even if they're super squeaky clean, will show you that.
Have you ever tried those? They have these glasses that turn everything upside down.
No.
They're really disturbing. But if you wear them long enough, your brain writes itself. And even though you're physically, everything is reversed, experientially, you start to see it as normal. Mm-hmm. And that always struck me metaphorically, kind of to the point you're making, is that we can get used to any point of view, and it starts to seem normal, even if it's completely backwards, even if it's completely upside down. And really, the only way we can begin to know truth is as best we can take off all the glasses.
Yeah.
So, last question for you. Mm-hmm. How do we do that?
I think we play with it. I think we try. And I think that's also why the word faith was in there. Someone needs to sort of plant the idea in us, whether it's ourselves or someone else. But I think if we kind of just entertain it and see if we could believe it even for a second, and I think you guys were just talking about that before, if we could just entertain the idea, and then just try it out. And maybe you take them off for half a second and you pop them back on for 3 years. That's okay. I think we all pop them back on from time to time.
Yeah, I mean, I know that, you know, there are people who wear glasses who just, they're not comfortable looking at the world without the glasses between them and the world. It's sort of they've learned to hide a little bit and feel a little safer, being in there that way. And so one of the things that, you know, if you're listening and you're kind of going, okay, well, yeah, no, I want to do that. I guarantee you, you've had moments. And maybe they felt few and far between, or maybe they feel normal, or maybe they just feel like your best moments, where you just were seeing clear. You had that kind of clarity of mind. And that is our natural state. We are made clear. And yeah, it's going to get muddled up, but it's okay. Because if you let it settle, it always goes back to clarity, because clarity is our nature. So next up, we have Joanna Cottrell. Am I going to get that right? Oh, I'm like 4 for 4. This is great. So she has worked with people all over the world and has found that no matter what the country, we all want the same thing. Lives that make us fulfilled and joyful. And I think that sounds about right to me. So, Joanna, what is your message for the world?
Well, my message comes through my experience, because for years I felt that I lived with low-grade unhappiness and anxiety. And no matter how lovely my life was, I always felt that there was something missing. And I believed that my happiness depended on achievement and acquisition, and I couldn't understand when I got that right how I was feeling so unsatisfied. Mm-hmm. And I discovered a few things that really changed my life. One was that my happiness didn't depend on what was happening outside. It was really an inside out. And that was a really interesting turn. And the second was I saw how my thoughts were causing my unhappiness. And I began to see that thoughts are temporary. They're like the weather. As long as I didn't pay attention to them, that they changed. And the other is that when I really quieted down, there was so much more possibility. There was a sense of well-being. And once I began understanding this, my life began to get better. And even though nothing on the outside changed, there was a feeling of everything was just fine.
So I know you've worked with populations around the world, from very successful business people, very, very poor, and even what most people would call dangerous areas. Have you found a difference in people's ability to see through thought, depending on their experience of life and their circumstances?
I think in certain cultures, it's more challenging when there's a tribal culture that everyone has to believe the same way. But I find when you connect with people in their humanity, that they began to see that the differences don't matter as much as what connects us, which is could be with two mothers caring about their sons in the Middle East going out and not knowing whether they're going to come back. You know, that shared experience of love for their children.
Yeah, I know I've seen in my travels that the people who seem to be most open to living beyond thought instead of just trying to get better thought, living regardless of circumstance instead of continually chasing circumstance, are either the people who've won the game of life and they know it doesn't work, like they've won and it's like, oh, is that it?
Yeah.
And then they're open to it being something else. And the people who are never going to win because the game is rigged so heavily against them, or they're just starting from so far back, they're never going to get to what society says winning looks like. And then they're also very open. And it's kind of those of us in the middle, I find, who struggle to see beyond our thinking, because we just think, well, maybe if I just had slightly better circumstances, a little bit more money, then it would all work out. But the second anyone is willing to drop thought, put it down for a minute, not take every little thought that comes through their head to heart, they find their heart and they find that deeper part of themselves.
And they're so joyful that someone can actually show them that, because we're not taught that automatically.
No, it's my favorite. It's my favorite line in this whole conversation. Somebody should have told us, but well, you know what? Somebody is telling you. A whole bunch of somebodies. Thank you, Janet. So this is something I hope as you're listening, you're kind of trying this on for yourself, because one of the things that we're pointing to, each of us in our own way, that's a little bit different to a lot of what you hear if you listen to a lot of Hay House Radio and a lot of just generic self-helpiness, is we're actually not saying you need better thinking, you need better glasses, you need a better perspective. What we're all pointing to in our own way is that if you can see the nature of thought, if you become aware that you are wearing glasses, you just thought you were looking straight out into the world, it opens something deeper up in us. Next up, we have Drissia Schroeder Hohenworth.
Yes.
Oh, wow, that wasn't too bad. She is French. She is living in Germany and a world traveler, as evidenced by the fact that she's in L.A. with me right now. She's a transformative coach and an organizational consultant working for global corporations. And Drissia, what's your message for the world?
The message is To recognize the beauty that we all have in us, the beauty of who we are. Because beyond the limits of our life experiences and our memories and who we think we are, there is a place within us where the divine touches us, a place beyond the labels or how we or other people define us. This place is untouchable. It is our source of beauty, it is love, creativity and connection, and it is actually who we really are. It is okay if we don't feel it sometimes, it's okay if we forget about it, it's just human. Some situations are also painful and challenging, that's life. We can get caught in our head and our stressful thoughts. We can have also, life is a contact sport, we can have also situations where we have to learn. It is all okay, we all go through it, we've been through that and it will come again. It is part of being human. But still, and regardless what we experience in life, there is part in us which is connected with the divine and is always there. When we are in touch with this part in us, which stays pure and unbreakable, regardless what's happening outside, we find the answers that we look for. We find peace with ourselves and with others, and we start trusting life. At least that was my experience. When I touched with this point, I started trusting life. So let us go there. Let us meet there so that you can connect. We can connect with the beauty of who we are and who you are. And from there, we can do anything.
So how do we reconcile, and maybe we don't, but how do we reconcile the first part of what you said, which is that, yeah, we're human beings, we're in life, life is a contact sport, and sometimes our experience of it's going to be kind of crappy, with this access to the divine, with this awareness of the divine that comes and goes as part of the experience? I mean, is there a direction of travel? Should we be trying to do more of one and less of the other? Should we be just accepting it all and going, okay, I don't know? Like, what's our job in all of this?
Our job is just to be aware of it. Because when we are aware of how life works, how we are reacting to things around us, when we are aware of what we are feeling and in touch with ourselves, we pass through things more quickly. We have more understanding for ourselves and others. And if we get caught in painful situations or painful thoughts or whatever, feelings, we know that it will pass. There's a something in us, a place in us that knows that it will pass. Nice. And being, yeah, full of understanding and love for ourselves and for the rest of the world is, yeah, something that helps us go through these challenging situations sometimes.
Beautiful. Thank you, Tricia.
You're welcome.
You know, there's a story that my wife loves, and it's an old, I heard it first as a Sufi story, but I imagine it actually may exist in multiple traditions. And it's of a king who was very wise, and he could tell that he was at his worst when he got too high or too low, when he got too carried away by the good things that happened or too discouraged and devastated by the bad things that happened. And so he asked for all the wise men in his kingdom to come up with something magical that would prevent him from ever getting too high or too low. And many people tried many things, and they would teach him meditations, and they would give him wise teachings from various traditions. But ultimately somebody handed him a magic ring. And he looked at it, and it just looked like a ruby, a very nice ruby. He's a king. But he went, what is this? And they just said, just wear it, and you'll see. And at that moment, news came that the kingdom was under attack, and that it looked like the city was going to be lost, and that the castle was surrounded. And he started to panic, and he started to order everybody to protect him, but there was just chaos and panic, and he totally lost track of anything other than being a scared human being. And at that moment, the ring, the ruby on his finger, started to glow. And when it glowed, he could see right through it. And in the very heart of the ruby, it said, "This too will pass." And he remembered himself. And he remembered that he was the king. And he restored order first within the castle, and then within the army, and then eventually within the kingdom. And towards the end of the battle, they captured the leader of the enemy troops, and they brought him in before him, and he was pretty pissed off with them, right? You challenge my kingdom! And so he's like plotting all the evil, dungeony things like a Bond villain he's going to do to this guy. And then just as he's about to command his torture and death, the ring starts to glow. And he looks at it, and right in the very heart of the ruby, it says, "This too will pass." And he settles, and he feels compassion. And, of course, he imprisons the man, but he orders that he's treated with kindness and treated with respect, as all humans in his kingdom want to be treated. So with that said, next up we have Paul Merck. Paul is a financial advisor and coach that pays as much attention to people as he does to money. And he works with humans, which is nice. Often wealthy, if you have a very wealthy cat that inherited, Paul's not your guy, but otherwise, he works with humans, often wealthy, in transitions that impact money and life. Paul, welcome. What's your message for the world?
Oh, hey, Michael. Hundreds of years ago, there was broad agreement among humans that the Earth is flat. And so if we thought about getting in a ship and going
out of
the ocean.
Wait, it's not?
Damn it. We'll talk later.
All right, thank you.
get in the ship, head out into the ocean. And if you were brave enough to do it, many weren't. So that shaped their world as non-travelers on the ocean. But the brave ones, the intrepid ones, would always be watching. Are we going to go off the edge? What do we have to do? So these days, of course, we know that was never happening. There's a corollary to the belief that the Earth is flat for many of us on the planet today, and that is the belief that how I feel is driven by what happens to me or for me. And it looks like there's direct linkage, and that's, I think, kind of what we learn, you know, growing up in the cultures that we grew up in. There's a reality, though, that says that in between that, the stimulus and then the response, we sit there and we see what happens and we think about what happens and we make conclusions and we, and that actually is what invites our feelings of joy or fear or sadness or whatever. So the thing I want to share in just a moment is the possibility of creating a kind of a tectonic shift in life when we begin to get, oh, you know, how I'm feeling isn't driven by the fact that I just had an accident in my car or my dad just yelled at me, but it's how I'm with that, what I'm doing with that as it happens. And so there's a chance we'll shift. And knowing that creates lots of shifts in my experience in every area of life.
Now, how does this play out with, you know, with your clients? Because a lot of people, and I think I'm probably one of them, before I met very wealthy people, assumed, well, yeah, it's fine. What do they have to be worried about? Like, they've got money, right? Yeah. That's the problem in my world. What have you found in working with that population with this understanding that actually there's the stimulus response model is inaccurate or incomplete at the very least?
Yeah, well, I mean, even the thing that you just shared, which is such a fantastic and broadly held, you know, perception that, well, this one's got money, so he or she doesn't have any challenges. And from my perspective, seeing what I've seen with the people that I've worked with, it carries a complete package of difficulty that others don't, if they haven't experienced it, they don't see it and understand it, and there's not much sympathy for it either. Boo-hoo, you know.
Yeah.
And
I
so...
What was the Tony Robbins line? It's the same as being poor. You just pull up to your problems in a limo.
There you go. So, you know, so if you lived in a world where it looked to you as though that was, you know, everyone was seeing you that way, and that's how it is, and you have to accept that, it might cause me to live behind closed doors with drawn curtains and not get out and do much. But being in contact with the reality that the story that's held out there broadly isn't necessarily the truth, and becoming reliant upon our own knowing, and knowing that's deeper than our own knowing, is...
So let me ask you a question. What's the relationship, as you see it, between money and happiness?
I see... So, Venn diagram, right?
Okay
so... That looks
for those of you playing at home, draw three intersecting circles.
Oh, this is radio, isn't it? That Venn diagram looks like two circles completely independent of one another to me. You know, and because I know people who are fabulously wealthy, who have a really hard time finding what feels like happiness. And then I watch YouTube videos. So there's a guy, Matt something. He used to put out a bunch of stuff called, his shows were Where the Hell Is Matt? And he would go around the world, and he would play music and have people dance to a ditty. And I remember seeing some of those things that were filmed in third world countries where there was, the kids that were dancing in abject poverty, you know, clothes that were rags and squalor. And the joy on their faces was unparalleled, really. Yeah. And so, you know, I think it's fun to be happy with money. If I can choose, I'm going to choose doing it that way. But I don't have any thought that one has to have money to be happy, or that having money is going to lead invariably to happiness.
Cool. And yeah, I'll share from my own, you know, my own experience that it was fascinating because I kind of used to flip-flop between the idea that money would bring happiness or that money would bring misery, because I met, in the course of my work, some happy millionaires and some miserable millionaires. And ultimately, the more time I spent playing between those worlds, the more it seemed to me that happiness is an independent variable. And wealth is an independent variable. And sometimes they intersect, and sometimes they don't. And so the idea that money can make you happy or miserable only makes sense in a world where A, we think how we feel on the inside comes from what we have on the outside, but B, from a world where we actually think that things like money can exist outside of thought. Now, if that doesn't make sense to you, there's a thing I call the wheelbarrow test, which is, if you can't put it in a wheelbarrow, it's got to be made of thought, right? So we think, well, I could put money in a wheelbarrow, but no, you could put cash in a wheelbarrow. But money, as you think about it, only exists in thought. Can you put confidence in a wheelbarrow? Well, no, you can't put confidence in a wheelbarrow, even though we talk about it as a thing. And there are so many things we strive for, we want more of, that only exist in our own minds. And so to go into the world to try to get them makes no sense. Now, I was explaining this to my 24 at the time year old son, and he called back, you know, we had this great chat about it, and then he called back and he said, Dad, how big's the wheelbarrow? I'm like, no, it's not, does it fit in the wheelbarrow? It's an infinite wheelbarrow. It's just, are we talking about something that exists in form, in which case the laws of physics pertain, or the laws of supply and demand, or cause and effect, or are we talking about something that is made of thought, but looks real? And it just turns out that most humans suffer not from the stuff that goes in wheelbarrows, but from the stuff that is made of thought and looks like it could be carried around in a wheelbarrow. Next up, we have Holly Mitchell. She's a well-being transformative coach who loves creating spaces and experiences to help people connect to their true self, true nature, and fall back in love with their life. She loves to travel, being in nature, and photography, and lately has been exploring working closely with horses and well-being. Holly, what is your message for the world?
Hey, Michael. So my message goes back to a lot of what everyone's been speaking to here today, and it's just embracing all of who we are, all of what we think is wrong with us, and all of what we think is great about us, and just knowing that it's all part of the beautiful creation of who we are. And so, you know, I give thought to what if we could embrace all of who we are and live life in our full humanness. And my wishes and desire for anyone that I get to speak to is for them to see how no matter what is going on with our lives today or in the past, that we're always okay, ultimately. And
I want to stop you because what I hear that. Mm. I've heard that said. I probably said that on this show. Mm. What does that mean? Like in other words, if I'm sitting there and my partner has just dumped on me or literally dumped me. Mm. If I am sitting there and my business has just gone down the toilet, my customers have left, my clients have fallen through, if I'm doing something and suddenly my reputation is damaged on the internet, if I'm sitting in my home and there's an earthquake and everything that I love goes down the hill, what does it mean to say it's okay?
Yeah, no, that's a really, really good question. I can only speak to what I've seen for myself and my experiences in life. And what I see more and more is that I can't avoid what happens in life. I can't avoid the good, the bad things that happen, and I can't avoid how I feel about them. But what I do know is that that is also just part of being human. And because I feel devastated by something, it doesn't mean that I am not going to find a way to overcome it. I also know that whatever experience I am having in the moment, there's always going to become a moment of clarity, even if it's just for a moment. And those moments come and keep coming and keep coming. So basically, our experience ebbs and flows. And I've seen, you know, in my experiences of life, that I always find a way. Life is always there to catch me. I am always there to catch myself, ultimately. Yeah. And that's what I mean about being okay, is that until we leave this planet, we're all ultimately find our way of getting through stuff, and we don't need to be afraid of feeling the negative stuff, the bad stuff. Like, that's not where the fear is.
I think that's more huge than we think. Knowing
yes,
that.
Has been for me.
Yeah.
So huge. Yeah.
Yeah, because we think, well, no, when I get this right, I just won't feel bad.
Yeah.
And bad things won't happen to me because I'm vibrating at the level of somebody who bad things don't happen to.
Yeah.
And I've just never actually seen any human being who lives at that level.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that's not one of the options, then it seems to me that knowing there is something there that will catch us, that we will catch us.
Yeah.
That's everything.
Yeah.
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 Thank you.
Thank you.
So, as you're listening, I hope you're both hearing the different ways that people are talking about this, but also connecting some of the dots for yourself. Because there is, you know, I mentioned one fundamental thing, which is the difference between trying to get better thinking and waking up to the fact that we think and the difference that makes. But another one is finding that balance between, hey, I don't need my circumstances to look a certain way to be fulfilled, and it's okay if they look a certain way and I can be fulfilled. And Joanna, we were talking a little bit about the work that you do with your art, and I just wondered if you could share some of what you've been doing, but also some of the impact that you've seen from that.
Well, the project I'm most excited about now is a magazine called Freeway. And what we've done is we brought in 100 disposable cameras to my friend's place, which is a homeless drop-in center for kids from 14 to 24. And then we just told to go out and take pictures. And of those 100 cameras, we got 16 back. We printed them. We went back to the kids, and they took their photos, and they made collages. And it was, and we published a magazine
yeah.
from that. And what they wrote, when their experience was incredible, that they were able to see their world in a different way.
Mm.
What I love most about it, these are kids who feel there's nothing there for them. And for them to see that they could create something, that there was something inside of them that had nothing to do with their circumstance, with their thinking, with their belief of what was possible. It was just really beautiful. And it's such a testament to this innate creativity, which is in all of us no matter what. And it took them out of it, you know, it took them out of their suffering. They were joyful.
I think you've hit on something there, because I think creativity is the great equalizer.
Yeah.
There are no preconditions to creativity. You don't have to be born a certain way in a certain situation. That's sort of a universal gift, and it's a place we can go independent of how we feel.
Well, you know, this definitely speaks to me, because there are certain areas where I feel I'm creative and I have superpowers, and there's others where I tell myself, for example, I don't like to write, I can't write, and in this week I had assignments for you to write, and I was just amazed what I was able to write. And I had this awareness this morning that the only reason I'm not doing that is because I'm telling myself that it's not something I can do. And once it's just an exercise rather than a sense of accomplishment or something, there's an incredible freedom and intelligence that takes over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was talking with the group yesterday, and I played them a song, and I don't know if you know the song Flowers Are Red by Harry Chapin. And it's the story of a little boy who's just enjoying his creativity. You know, he's the kind of kid who would have returned his camera. He's one of the 16 out of the 100 that would have returned his camera in Joanna's program. And just is drawing, and a teacher comes up and goes, "What are you doing?" He goes, "I'm drawing." And, "Well, it's not time for art. Like, art is after lunch." And anyways, what's with all those colors? Flowers are red, and leaves are green. And there's no need to see flowers any other way than the way they've always been seen. And the little kid, filled with the creativity and joy of youth, says, "There are so many colors in the rainbow. There's so many colors in the morning sun. There's so many colors in the flower, and I see each and every one." And And as the song goes on, the teacher like wears down this kid and winds up sticking him in the corner until he's just kind of bored and he starts thinking. And when we start thinking, we start freaking and, you know, kind of scares himself. And he finally goes up to the teacher and goes, Miss, flowers are red and green leaves are green and there's no need to see flowers any other way than the way they always have been seen. And she pats him on the head. And we've all had that happen to us at some point in our lives. We've all been taught that creativity, well, there's a time for that. There's a place for that. That has no place in business. That has no place in this very serious situation. We'll save that for, you know, you go do your little art thing in your free time. But the creative spirit is the spirit of innovation. The creative spirit is why we live in a world that was unimaginable 20 years ago, let alone 100 years ago, let alone 1,000 years ago. And it has ever been thus. Creativity, the creative spirit, our relationship with the divine, with the alive, with God, that's our get-out-of-jail-free card. That is the source of our freedom. There is no circumstance in which you do not have that, in which you are not that. And when we start to realize that, it's kind of cool what it opens up, because if I was going to sort of put it into a metaphor, and I do that from time to time, I think the metaphor would have to be, and let's go with superpowers, right? We have superpowers, whether we know it or not, whether we use them or not. And one of our superpowers is the power to think. And the problem is, until we understand it, we often use it to create nightmare scenarios. We use it to create ourselves as people who don't have superpowers. I remember I was working with a coach once, and his big idea was that you create yourself with language. So we would write out these statements about, and I am this, and I am that, and I am this kind of person, and I am that kind of person, and I'm $1 million a day, and I'm what, what? It was very macho and cool and exciting, and it also felt very forced and very artificial and very misguided. Because while on the one hand, it felt great to say all those amazing things about myself, on the other hand, it actually bizarrely kind of limited me. So I went out of being anything, and I was stuck with being something. And I've just found I'm more in love with the possibility of art than necessarily deciding the kind of artist I'm supposed to be. And Nina, in your art, in your work, how do you describe, maybe for yourself, maybe when you're sharing with others who are learning about art, that space before it comes, that space out of which your creations come?
It's actually indescribable, but the attempt I can make at it is that there is just, anything's possible. Anything is possible. And if I ask, well, what if I do this, or what if I add that, or okay, so what if it's ugly? What's behind that? And I have that spirit of curiosity, and let go of my judgment of how I think it looks or what it should look like or how other people think. It's actually so many things come forward because my attention is different. It's not focused on anybody else or anything else. It's just being a vessel, and let's see what happens. Let's come through.
So what, for you, has been the relationship or the learning curve between that space of pure, indescribable possibility that you've just done a very nice job of describing, and perfectionism, the desire to get it right, the desire to get it perfect, the desire to do it the right way and have it turn out the right way?
Well, I've certainly had my share of attempting to do that, and it always ends in tears. So I have found that it is so liberating to say, so what? So if I hear these thoughts and say, that's terrible. That's ugly. Nobody will like that. I can say, so what? It's so much freedom. It's so much possibility, where perfectionism is like being in shackles. It's just, you can't, you
but,
can't
but have
possibility.
You never had the voice inside your head when you go, so what? Go, well, I'll tell you. People that I love will stop caring about me. I'll never work again. My art will be the laughingstock of the world, and I'm going to have to get a job at CVS.
Well, I've never had thoughts quite like that.
No, CVS is great, and they're hiring. They're really nice there. Anyway, sorry, that's not...
I don't take it seriously anymore.
Right.
Because it's the word chimerical. It's just a thought. It comes and goes. I don't have to take it seriously. I can say, not today, and I can just keep going.
Yeah. And is that something you learned, or just something that's happened over time?
I learned it the hard way.
Right.
Because I had decades of self-criticism and voices I heard from the past, and finally I had enough. I just had enough, and I knew it wasn't all there was, and I knew how much it my bones, and I was done. There were enough people pointing me in a different direction that said, well, so what? Try this. Do that.
So just on the off chance there's anybody listening who's thinking, there's an easy way? What's the easy way?
The easy way is thumbing your nose at other people's opinions, as well as the ones in your head that aren't supporting you.
Yeah. Cool. So that's perfect. And I think, I don't know why I'm thinking of the opening of Romeo and Juliet. Do you thumb your nose, sir? I thumb my nose. Do you thumb your nose at me, sir? Anyways, it has nothing to do with anything, but I get bored in here sometimes, so I just talk. We are coming up, as you know, on our very last show. So next week, we'll be back with a show called Endings and Beginnings. And I'm going to share some of my favorite moments from the last 14 years. And I would love next week to hear from you and to kind of hear some of your favorite moments from the last few years, and just to kind of reflect on the fact that that's the nature of life in the wheelbarrowless world, where things that we love change form, they transform. I always kind of bizarrely loved physics, and the notion in physics that it's all energy, and that nothing can ever be created or destroyed. It can just change forms. It can just transform. And I hope through these conversations, through these shows each week, you found some transformation for yourself. You found the form of your life changing, the form of yourself changing in ways that delight you, in ways that please you. If you want to learn more about the work that we do, you'll be able to find me long after the show is gone at michaelneal.org. If you happen to be wanting to play in the next week, I've got an event coming up with Anita Morjani. A lot of you know Anita. She's hosted a show for many years here as well. Wrote the New York Times number one bestseller, Dying to Be Me. And she and I will be hosting a live and live streaming event next weekend, the 21st and 22nd of September 2019, called Finding Freedom, a Get Out of Jail Free Card for Your Life. And you can book your tickets for that at michaelneal.org/. Actually, I don't know. What is it? / Finding Freedom. That was actually a very good URL. michaelneal.org/Finding Freedom. As I said, we will be back with another live show next week. And I think the thought that I'd like to leave you with for today is, none of these guys knew they were going to be doing this morning, right? Literally, I told them this morning, hey, you're coming on my radio show and you're going to talk about your message to the world. And they all not only were able to do it and willing to do it, they all actually spoke from that place in them that you have in you. And that's your homework. Go out, play with what is your message for the world, and start sharing today. Until next time, have fun.